Welcome to Cooler Than Homework, a Disney Channel original movie podcast. I'm Nicole Sweeney, and right now as we're recording this, the celebrity that I would like to voice my smart house is Vanessa Kirby.
I am Matthew Gatos, and the celebrity that I would want to voice my smart house is voice actor Jim Cummings.
My name is Vanny Nis, and the celebrity I would use is Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
And I'm Sari Riley, and the celebrity I would like to voice my smart house is Manny Jacinto.
This week, we are, of course, talking about Smart House, and Mari is now going to tell us how close Sari was in her plot synopsis.
I think the closest piece of thing was probably when you said smoothies. I lost it. I was like, there are smoothies. You're right.
Yeah. Same.
Other than that, the Smart House was definitely there, but it wasn't necessarily the future. So Smart House is what I would consider a cinematic masterpiece. It is also the tragic story of a family who's lost their mother and the house that terrorizes them. I would also summarize by saying that this is the story of when Disney learned that you could use DCOMs to promote pop music. In Smart House, we follow the Cooper family, single dad Nick, son Ben, and little sister Angie. As I mentioned before, their mother Cooper, has passed away, and so the family has had to work out a routine in which Ben is taking on a lot of responsibility, and he cooks something called tuna noodle. I don't know what that is. Ben is determined to make sure that their family is okay and that their family definitely doesn't date again ever. To that end, Ben enters a contest to win a smart house, which he, of course, does. The Coopers meet Smart House's creator and programmer, Sarah, who we are told repeatedly is unlucky in love, because how else would she be good at computers unless she was not dating? Sarah introduces the house, named Pat, to the Coopers, showing off its features like a breathalyzer in the kitchen, an instant food maker, there's projection screens everywhere, you know, smart things. Sarah and dad Nick start dating, and Ben is very upset about this, so he is conveniently a programming genius, and he breaks into the house control room and reprograms Pat to be more motherly, but he does it by showing her a bunch of like Nick at Night shows, but it's not Nick at Night because this is a Disney movie, but you know, like old-timey movies. So in Pat's quest to be more motherly, she takes one of Nick's comments that he wishes the kids had more fun to heart. Nick and Sarah go off on a date, and meanwhile, Pat throws a party for the kids and invites people from school, including Ben's crush and his bully. Then the house bullies the bully and gets rid of him, and everybody dances and has a great time, and things are great until the kids realize that their dad is almost home. Pat helps them clean up, but they miss a sweater and they are busted. So Pat takes responsibility for her portion, causing Nick to tell her to knuckle down. Pat does knuckle down, insisting on like vitamins and not wearing baggy shorts outside and strict bedtimes.
Classic mother things.
Classic. When I think of a classic strict mother, mm-hmm. vitamins and baggy shorts. The Coopers are worried. So Sarah comes over to check Pat out and figures that if she turns it off and turns it back on again later, it'll fix everything.
Also a classic approach to solving a technological problem.
Don't date and shut it down. Those are classic technological. Sarah stays over for dinner and they cook the old-fashioned way. So Nick makes a comment about like, who needs Pat anyhow? And Pat is like, oh, hell no. So she turns herself back on and manages to make herself a virtual projection Kathy Seagal body, like a housewife body. It's very cool. Pat kicks Sarah out, not cool, and puts the entire house on lockdown, threatening to keep the Coopers there forever. The next morning, Ben and Sarah figure out a way to sneak Sarah back into the house. Pat realizes what's going on pretty quickly and loses her shit. She becomes a giant projection tornado. And she insists that she can be the best mom and starts creepily singing lullabies to prove it. Nick and Sarah try to protect the kids from flying couch cushions and things like that. And that inspires Ben for the big moment. He tells Pat that she can't be their mom because she's not real. When she did her whole tornado freakout, the real adults protected the kids, but Pat can't do that. Pat tries to touch Ben, but she can't. Again, not real. She gets very sad and says that she'll miss them very much before turning off and unlocking the house. Sarah is able to reset Pat, and the Coopers continue living in the smart house, and Nick keeps dating Sarah. Ben has come to terms with the fact that no one is trying to replace his mom. Also, we're supposed to believe everything is A-OK, but also Pat sneakily puts chocolate chips in the pancake batter, and that's a great way for your house to rebel against you, I guess, but it's still your house disobeying you. The end.
All right, before we talk about this movie, Matt, where is this cast now?
This cast is, they're great. They're pretty good. They're all doing their things, all alive, as far as I could tell. And yeah, no sad stories here, thankfully.
Yay.
Even the dog.
Yes. I did. Yes.
For sure.
Healthy, happy, on a farm.
Loving that farm.
That dog and the band Five, both thriving. So let's start off with Angie Cooper, the little sister, because we might recognize her as being the little sister from Brink as well. And in this movie, she gets to rollerblade. So take that, Brink. But as I said last time when we talked about Brink, she is nowhere on the internet and I couldn't find anything about her. So we don't know where she is now, but assume safe and well and living a normal life. The director of this film was Mr. LeVar Burton, which is weird.
What?
Yeah, you might know him from Reading Rainbow or playing Kunta Kinte in Roots or playing Geordi LaForge in Star Trek. Just being, from what I've seen, a delightful human being.
Does he direct other things? Like, is this the single thing he's ever directed?
I believe he's directed other things, but I don't know. I feel like this was maybe early in his directing, like, oeuvre. It's a very weird thing. It's like, start watching this and it just pops up at the beginning, like, directed by LeVar Burton, and you're like, okay, sure. But yeah, I know he directed some episodes of Star Trek, but that kind of, like, that happens for a lot of actors, is like directing the show they're on,
right?
But I don't know that he's directed a ton of things outside of Star Trek and Smart House, so I don't know how that happened. LeVar, if you're out there, let us know.
Wait, sorry. I was just looking at his IMDb myself now. And Mari, I have to tell you that he directed 3 episodes of the original Charmed.
Oh, wow.
All right.
This changes everything. So.
He also directed a movie called Blizzard, apparently. It's about a young girl's aunt tells her the tale of a young ice skater and an enchanted reindeer that surprisingly wasn't a DCOM. We have the star of this movie, Ben Cooper, played by Ryan Merriman. He's gone on to do some more movies, one of which we'll talk about later on this podcast. And I remember seeing him in Final Destination 3 most recently, which was not recent. But I also know he was, yeah, I know he was on Pretty Little Liars, but I didn't watch that. So I don't know who he played on that.
He was, oh, Ian, I think was his name. So he was one of the creepy, like, boyfriends or something? I don't know. Everybody was accused of being a...
one of several older men who dates a child, high schooler. And
gotcha.
Most notably...
well, specifically, he's one of the older men who dates Spencer, yes. Right? Like, Spencer in particular, okay, is preyed on by a great many adult men.
It was Spencer's older sister's, like, boyfriend that, but then was also making moves,
yes,
on Spencer.
And he was part of the creepy guys that, like,
yes,
recorded people,
yes,
right?
Yes.
That, like, that whole thing.
Yeah. We use the gif of him drinking milk creepily a lot on snarksquad.com. So
we'll put that up online as where Ryan Merriman is now, drinking milk creepily.
As someone who knows nothing about Pretty Little Liars, that was enlightening. Ryan Merriman is still acting occasionally in different little things. He posts a lot of selfies on Instagram and is on Cameo now. So, I mean, if we ever want him to record a message talking about Cooler,
yes,
Than Homework, We could pay him to do that.
Amazing.
I love that for us.
Just saying, that is something we have the power to do now, is make Ryan Merriman say something good about this podcast. And I've used Cameo before as like a gift thing. And I had a famous hockey player say something good about my dad for his birthday. And that cost like a couple hundred dollars. Ryan Merriman only cost $30. So
a steal
divided by four.
Yeah. We'd be crazy not to do this. Continuing down the line of stars of this film, we have Sarah Barnes, played by Jessica Steen, who I didn't recognize from anything else, but she has been in like the standard NCIS type of actor roles, and Armageddon she was in, and she's currently starring in what seems like a Canadian show called Heartland, where she just seems to play a nice woman. I watched a small clip.
What a nice woman, you thought to yourself as you watched this small
15
clip.
Seconds.
It seemed like a very wholesome show. Like, it's like I couldn't really tell what the show was about, but it seemed wholesome. So, I don't know.
Some Canadian who listens to this podcast is going to jump in and be like, oh, little do you know, she's the super villain of that universe.
She's a murderer.
Yeah. Heartland is our Pretty Little Liars. Yeah. We have the dad in this film, Nick Cooper, played by Kevin Kilner. And like most parents in DCOMs, he has gone on to be in one episode of every TV show that's ever existed, including House of Cards, Ugly Betty, CSI, and Elementary. But if you're going to recognize him from anything maybe semi-related to DCOMs, it would probably be from A Cinderella Story, where he plays Chad Michael Murray's dad.
Oh.
And last, but certainly not least, we have Katie Sagal, who plays Pat, both in voice and in hologram form in this film. And, I mean, you'll probably recognize her, if not from Married with Children, at least as the voice of Leela on Futurama, or the voice of Spinelli's mom on Recess, or as Jake's mom on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, or from Eight Simple Rules, or from Sons of Anarchy, or most recently she's on The Conners. So, she's pretty much been acting nonstop in something you've probably seen since 1987.
I definitely recognized her by her voice, but I couldn't place it. And so, after she materialized and stopped being a computer, I was like, I know her voice. And so, I just watched probably 10 minutes of the movie with my eyes closed, being like, I can't look at IMDb. That'll ruin the podcast. But where is she from? And then I finally figured out Leela.
You watched 10 minutes of the movie with your eyes closed?
Yeah, it might be like, it was like a shockingly long time. 10 minutes might be an exaggeration, but somewhere it felt like a really long time of me just like not watching and trying to place her voice. So I missed part of the middle to end, but it's fine.
Nicole said I should probably throw this into the Where Are They Now section, but most recently, the news I have about Katie Sagal is that she is on Twitter liking my tweets where I call her a national treasure.
No, wow. Matthew.
Yeah. I tweeted while I was watching this saying, watching Smart House, and I have to say, Katie Sagal is a national treasure. And I got that little notification that Katie Sagal liked that tweet. So we're best friends now.
Ooh. That's amazing.
Yeah. Basically, that is what that means.
That is what that means. If somebody likes your tweet, you're best friends.
Yeah. Matt, why didn't you get her on the podcast?
Yeah. She's not busy.
The only Snark Squad related thing I've ever gotten was E.L. James following me. This is so much better. I'm jealous.
Yes. Did she unfollow you?
Yes, immediately.
Yes.
Okay.
And then blocked me.
I was going to say.
It was pretty great, to be clear.
Yeah, that is even better. That makes the story like 10 times better.
Yeah.
Followed you, realized what you were saying, and then was like, oh, wait.
I've made many mistakes, and this is one of them.
Now it is time to talk about Smart House. But first, nostalgia check. Do you remember watching this movie as a kid?
Yes, a lot. I own it on DVD.
Yes, also a lot. And the line that was like so in my head this time was, you can't be our mom, Pat. You're not real. So I was like, oh, there it is. The thing that is forever in my heart and my head.
I also remember watching this as a kid, but like not as clearly as some of the other things. Like, this doesn't have super strong nostalgia ties for me, except that, like, I vaguely remember watching it.
And obviously, no.
All right. So did you like this movie? Sari, this is your first time watching this. Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy it?
I loved it. This is my favorite DCOM that we've watched so far.
Yeah.
It was so fun. I like the comedy, the floor sucking stuff up, the oranges flying everywhere. Everything was so funny to me. It was really heartwarming. The father-son conversations when Nick yelled at Ben, like, you're not the only one who lost someone. I felt that in my heart. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such a good movie. You could have told me that this wasn't a DCOM besides like the Mickey Mouse orchestra. And I'd have believed you. And I would have been like, I still like this movie. It was fun.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with Sari that this is my favorite DCOM. I think this just, yeah, I think Sari said it perfectly. Like, the comedy in it, everything just kind of works perfectly. And there's even heartwarming moments when he's watching the home movies of his mom and like crying and talking to his dad. I don't know. It's a very, very good movie. And even if you take out some of the, like, I think if you removed some of the outdated music, you would lose something for like our age range. But I think if you took out the outdated music, kids today could watch this and still enjoy this movie.
I didn't recognize any of the music. And
come on, Sari.
My partner, and I turned to her and I was like, is this a real song or a song that they made up for this movie? And every time she was like, it was a real song.
To be fair, I think like Bewitched is the one that I'm like, that's the most popular song in this, is C'est la vie by Bewitched. A lot of the other songs are by the band Five, which they were never as famous as a lot of bands, at least in America. So their songs were less recognizable. And there is one song in this that I believe was made for the movie, which is The House is Jumpin'. And I think that one was written to sound like standard boy band fare of the day, but was made for Smart House. So there is a mixture of real songs slash fake songs. And yeah, there was even songs that in my head existed in this movie, but aren't in this movie, which is weird. But I think it's because I looked this up because I thought I was going nuts. But apparently, like a month or two before this movie aired on Disney Channel, they had a live concert special with Five and Bewitched. And in that special, Five performed some songs that are not in this movie, but like are ingrained in my brain for some reason that I could have swore were in this movie. But the clips you see in this movie came from a Disney Channel special that they aired a couple months before the movie came out.
Was that the boy band? This is maybe a dumb question. Was that the boy band that they were all magically knew the dance to? That
yes.
I set up on the big screen? Okay.
Yeah.
I also really enjoy and love this movie. And it's giving me like a little bit of, you know, struggle right now to think if I love this or Xenon more, but I think that this like is a little bit better. It hurts me to say that, but I think I like this one better. But it just has a good balance. And I don't know if this is like, we're old now and watching this, but like when it has like good parent balance in the story, I'm like, yeah, good. You did a thing where it feels fuller or whatnot. So I enjoyed this back in the day. I enjoyed rewatching it a lot more than like I thought I would. And it holds up surprisingly well. And I do know all of the music, but it was because Disney was playing it all of the time. Like if you were watching the Disney Channel at this time, they would play like music videos sometimes as commercials, like in between things. And so it would be like, you know, Five would be singing The House is Jumping in between, you know, commercial break or whatever. So all of the music just brought that wave of nostalgia back.
Yeah, the music related nostalgia was for sure the strongest like nostalgic tie that I had to this movie. I don't have super strong memories of watching it all the time like I do with some of the other DCOMs. Like it's, you know, for sure one that I saw a bunch, but for that reason Xenon just lives in my feelings stronger than this movie does. But I agree on every other front that, like, this is just a really good movie. And I was struck by something that Matt said last time about how the 13th year you're watching it, and you're like, oh, this is like a movie. Like, you made a real movie. This isn't just a 2-hour episode of a Disney show. And that is also what's going on here. Like, they're all of the emotional beats work. The comedy of it is good. Also, watching it now, something that I was super struck by is how often I felt like if this were not a kids movie, we were about to see, I don't know, the house murder someone. Like, the tension of, like, what's the house gonna do now? I don't know. All of that worked really, really well. But then, like, you know, all that happens is she kicks them out of the house, and that's it, because it's, you know, it's for children, and not a horror movie. But, like, I felt the tension of those moments still worked, if that makes sense.
Oh, the orange throwing scene is terrifying. Like, if yes! If you didn't know this was a DCOM, like, in that moment you might think, like, she's going to murder them with citrus. Like, this is gonna happen. It takes so long to, like, slow down, and it just is, like, if you were in that house at that moment, that's terrifying.
When she kicks the scientist out of the house, that for me was, like, a very heavy. Well, first, when the bully comes into the house, I was like, is she, and she talks about smashing something. I don't know. She uses a word. I forget what word she uses now, but I was like, is the house going to crush him? Like, yeah. Is the house going to murder a child?
Yeah. She says, like, maybe by the end of the night, I'll have a crush on you.
Yes. Yes.
You can just see him getting, like, put into some sort of, like, compactor. Like, bye, buddy.
Yeah.
For as much as, like, some of the technology, you know, it's inevitable that you're like, oh, that feels kind of dated. The idea of, like, an entire smart house, I think, surprisingly holds up. And then the fact that the like, bottom line is that the technology rebels, like, that story is forever, right? And so when they hit, like, the beats of, like, they turned her off and she's like, you can't turn me off or whatever, that makes it feel like I could watch this movie anytime, because technology is always going to be slightly scary.
Yeah, all the stuff with the computer room, and even though it was kind of, like, hand wavy, her AI learns. But still, that idea that an AI is learning without you and just, like, picks random things from the media, and then it can be a happy face or it can be evil and turn against you and just, like, take your command very literally. I feel like that is a current fear that people have with robots and technology, for sure.
It's like a family friendly version of 2001: A Space Odyssey, when you're like, oh yeah, no, this creepy AI program thinks it knows better than the humans, and so therefore makes their lives bad. And this is just the, like, less murderous version of that.
And the whole thing where she's like, you know, Pat's watching you to get to know you, but not in a creepy way. And I'm like, there's no non-creepy way that this house is just constantly watching me. But thanks, I guess.
She had already taken their blood. She took their blood. Yes. And then she's like, don't worry, it's not creepy.
Yeah, I was almost expecting, because she took the blood sample, to generate, like, clones of them or something that they'd have to face off against. But also probably would have been too horror movie. Less kid movie.
Man, that'd be a good, I think that'd be good though. I think that you could work that in and not have it be too creepy. I found it interesting that they never dealt with the fact that this was all Ben's fault. as much as I really, really like this movie, and it is probably my favorite DCOM, they never, like, reveal, like, he doesn't tell anyone, and they don't deal with, like, well, how did Pat get this way? Like, it's entirely Ben's fault because he hacked the computer and made her this way. Like, but no one ever finds that out, which is kind of weird.
Mm-hmm. There's a scene towards the end when his dad says to him, like, I hope you learned your lesson. And I feel like that was the movie's attempt to resolve it. But it was like, what are you talking about? Are you talking about the lesson that it's okay for me to date? Are you talking about the lesson for, I don't know, don't... mess with the AI that you don't understand.
Yeah, don't throw parties.
Who knows?
Like,
well, right, yeah, because otherwise the implication is that Sarah designed it wrong. But like, no, she didn't. She did her job, and then this fucking kid came in and messed it up.
She did not date for years for nothing. She did this correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love Sarah. I didn't say that in my why I like this, but she is my favorite. I love her. I want to be her. I want to have a rat named Butler, who is my best friend. And who is trained to sneak into the house and deliver messages to my friends.
Yeah, I was confused at like how, like, in the later part, it makes sense that he shows up because they're clearly using him to send messages. But at the beginning, he's there at the house and it's her pet rat. So she brought the rat to the house she was fixing up.
Uh-huh.
I don't. Mm-hmm. I understand that, like, he had to exist early in the movie so that we understood he existed later in the movie. But it was very strange to think back of, like, why did she bring her pet rat to work?
Yeah. Because he's her friend, Matt.
More than bringing it to work, she designed the house with, like, rat holes. Like, the, it just had, yeah, like, little holes for the rat to be, like...
Because she's not going to design a house that excludes her friend, Mari.
Okay.
Next question.
Yeah. No, if I was a lonely scientist, I would totally do that. Be like, I'm going to design this very smart house that can make any snack you want, can make smoothies, has a big computer room, and no one talks to me, so I'm going to build a room for my rat, or I'm going to build, like, secret tunnels. For my only friend, this rat, to go around the house and visit me.
I'd be giving the tour and be like, here's the kitchen. Put your blood there. Don't worry about it. Keep moving. Here's the room for the cat. And they'd be like, we don't have a cat. I'm like, shut up. I designed this. This is the cat room.
Here's the giant computer closet. None of you are allowed to go in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And every single wall is also a TV. Don't worry about
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Which I love the giant TV walls, one, because I wouldn't mind having that, but also because there are certain times when the special effects on it are so, so bad for maybe even for the era. But like, so they look horribly green screen in front of them. But also sometimes the screen doesn't, it kind of like, if there's a desk against the wall, sometimes it just like goes over that desk somehow. And the desk disappears. And it's like, oh, yeah, don't worry about that. Just don't think about it too much. It's fine.
That was like when Pat said, just sweep everything onto the floor off the party. I'll take care of it.
Uh-huh.
That was so funny to me, but I didn't think too hard about it. It was just like, what in what world can a floor absorb a smoothie, but also absorb like whole pillows and just like, yeah. and not suck the humans in with it?
Yes, that was my thought. Like, why are they not getting absorbed? Angie is the size of a pillow.
Yeah, she's so small. Like, collectively, all that garbage, much more volume than the two kids. How does Pat know? I don't know. But there's another reality in the horror movie version where she eats the kids and then they get into like the trash basement.
Yeah, where's all that trash going?
It's very, very Willy Wonka, golden egg, like down the chute. Good luck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's like that one little food elevator. Where's it all being stored? Who knows?
It but... had so many oranges.
Yeah.
Well, and in world, like, Sarah raises an interesting point at one point where she talks about Pat has enough supplies to keep them in there for months. And I'm like, wait, okay, this raises questions of how often does Pat need to be restocked? Who's doing that? Is Sarah doing that? Do the parents, like, does Nick have to go out shopping to bring, like, groceries in for Pat to fill up her orange supply? Like, how do you know how to supply a house that can make literally anything at any time?
What we actually don't see is that the house is situated on a like very massive parcel of land and she's got a whole farm in the back. And that's how she's resupplying.
She's just slaughtering cows.
I was able to suspend my disbelief for the whole movie. But the one part that did feel weird to me, knowing the internet now and not having a good concept of the internet then, was that only 8,411 people entered this contest. to win this whole house, this no strings attached, win a house, and how this young boy was half the entries. And it was just like, you've got to send an electronic mail in. And just like the idea that something like that could be on the internet and blasted over the radio and presumably pretty heavily advertised.
Mostly my takeaway is that the ad guy whose job it was to promote it clearly was actually very bad at his job.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
And didn't need to exist in this movie at all.
Correct. Yes.
But it also said you had to live in the county.
Right. It was like limited to the county where they were living in. Maybe it's a small county and only some people have electronic mail so far.
Yeah, the moment where he talks about, like, if you're on the internet all night, how can somebody call? I was like, oh
no.
Flashbacks. Sari, did you ever have to deal with that?
I know that it existed. I don't remember having to deal with it. Like, I remember hearing the dial-up tone on the phone because I used computers pretty early on, but I played a lot of computer games. And so those were offline things. So I'm pretty sure my dad just like set me up with, okay, you're going to play Candyland. Okay, you're going to play Freddy Fish. Okay, you're going to play Putt-Putt. So that I wouldn't use the internet and there would be no competition between the phone lines. And I didn't understand technology nearly enough to venture out by myself.
We had a separate phone line for the internet.
Ooh.
But obviously, like only one computer can be using that. And I think I was the only person who figured out that you could like disrupt the line. So like I would plug a phone into the internet line and like smash buttons until it fucked up the other person's
wow.
connection.
Wow.
And then plug my computer back in so that I, because we had more than one computer too. So that was 12-year-old me, 12-year-old me trying to be the only person on the internet.
Master hacker Nicole Sweeney.
We're all just readjusting our idea of who you are as a person right now. Yeah.
Nicole, ruthless for the internet, Sweeney.
Much like our hero in this movie, I was a nerd with one interest. So.
Entering contests. Which I wanted more information on. Like, they make it sound like he's entered 1,000 contests, but they don't talk about any of the other ones or anything that he's possibly won or lost from any of these. And I'm just like, I want him to have a closet full of like useless shit that he's won in contests.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. It would be so funny if their house was like a janky smart house where he's won like this vacuum of the future that he gave to his dad, but no one ever uses. Like, weird play. I don't know. Yes. I also wanted to see the inventions that he'd won or whatever.
I also felt a little personally attacked by this movie because there's one scene where Angie is watching cartoons in the kitchen and Pat says, no, you shouldn't watch cartoons. You should watch this narrated science show about amoebas. And let's watch this microscopic footage about amoebas and you'll be smarter. And Angie's like, no, that's bad. Kids don't like these kinds of things. And she switches it back to cartoons. And instead of watching the amoeba show, she just gives up and leaves. And I'm like, hey, maybe that's a good show. Maybe you should check it out.
Amoebas are fascinating, damn it.
Matthew Gatos, producer of Journey to the Microcosmos,
yes.
was insulted.
That's irrelevant, Nicole. And maybe this next Monday's episode is all about amoebas. Who knows?
To be fair, it seems like Journey to the Microcosmos has better content than the show about amoebas, which just kept saying
amoebas
yeah. over and over again. Every time she like the animated show would move forward, but the amoeba show, it's like they couldn't script 10 seconds of it. So every time she flipped back, it was the same clip just going amoebas.
Yeah. Yeah, to be fair, if Journey to the Microcosmos was just Hank saying the word amoebas over and over again, maybe no one would watch it.
I love the idea of making this like alt version as a P4A clip or something. Journey to the Microcosmos, but it's just amoebas. Hank saying amoebas.
Every time it cuts to a new clip, he's just like, whoa, amoebas. Hey, look, yeah. Amoebas.
I think you have to do this with every video that you've done. So like, tardigrades. Tardigrades. Just like every time.
Just cut out every word that's not the name of the thing.
Ooh. Yeah. I think we're really onto something here. This week's group discussion topic is technology that media promised that we would have by now as we approach the year 2020 that we are really upset and disappointed that we don't have.
So I think I kind of went against the prompt a little bit. Because what mine is it is a piece of technology that exists in a movie that I wish existed now. But I don't know that it was necessarily promised to us because it's not like in the year 2005.
Oh, sure, sure.
But I think it would be just realistically extremely helpful. And I think it's from the movie Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. They have what they call a point of view gun, where you shoot a beam at another person and it makes them see things from your point of view.
Oh. That's the best answer. Wait, I want that.
I've not seen this movie, but I want it also.
To be fair, in the movie, it's not used for like as great of purposes as it could be, but I think in today's day and age, it could be very, very useful.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. It sounds like it could quickly become evil if you can like persuade people to be your point of view with the gun, but as a communication tool.
Yeah, here's from the Hitchhiker's wiki. There is an important detail here. The consortium who made this thing requested that the gun only work on men as they realized that the consequences could be disastrous if a man were to get a hold of it and persuade the female population to put their feet up and forget the housework. However, this wasn't necessary as it was said that the gun had little effect on women as their empathy levels were on average too high for the gun's circuitry to modify. So it apparently only works on men.
I love following up this answer. I did a little bit of research before just to make sure that it wasn't like a real thing. And some people were like, this now exists, but it looks fake. And also some people were like, you could use this app to do the same thing, but also sounds fake. And it's like the closet that selects your clothes. Like I was in this movie also, but like Clueless has that whole thing where it's like selecting your outfits. Yes. I just feel like that would make my daily life so much easier. It's a small thing that I would just be like, you do this and the closet would do it. That's like my real life.
And it makes getting dressed into like a fun game instead of like, I don't know, this disappointing chore.
That's my like everyday answer. If I were like a braver person, I would probably say stuff from Doctor Who, like sonic screwdriver or, I don't know, a TARDIS. That would be amazing to have if I had courage also to use them.
I respect and appreciate the realism embedded in this answer.
Yeah. I was thinking the same along the same lines of like, what is practical and what if I was brave enough to live in a world where this technology also lived? This is maybe a goofy answer, but like a transformer. I think as a kid, my grandpa gave me a bunch of I don't know, they were called something else, but like knockoff Go-Bots? Transformer toys or when Go-Bots. Yeah, I had a bunch of those. And I just like the idea that my car could become a robot. I don't know. I didn't even really want a car as a kid, but I was just like, I could be friends with my car and it'd help me out. And it'd like be a big friend to me. Sounds very cool. I watched the movie Bumblebee at some point on a plane, probably. But the downside of that is that my car would inevitably be involved in an intergalactic war. Don't want to really deal with that. Don't really want to be a hero in a story. I just want a car friend. Mm-hmm. A big robot who can help me do things. I don't know if this is a more realistic answer, but I'm a huge fan of public transportation. So like Futurama and the Jetsons both have pneumatic tubes that people can just like walk in and then it sucks you wherever you need to go pretty much by magic. No one ever inputs anything into a control panel, I don't think. And the logistics of that, don't want to think about it. But if I could just have tubes and I walk into them and I could go like think where I wanted to go. And then I could appear at Target or I could appear at the bank or appear at work or appear at home. Wow. That would be incredible. And also in both these universes, the public transportation is free and clean. And you just, these miraculous tubes are just like magical, basically teleportation, but you don't have to deal with the ethics question of where is my original body? Are you just transporting my, I don't know. Don't want to deal with that. Just suck me in a tube.
I love that because I also love public transportation.
This is not a laughing matter.
It's very serious. Public transportation is great. My answer is also very, I don't know, related, I guess, to Sari's answer. And much like all of the others, isn't so much a thing that I was promised, but it is the thing that I would want. And it's Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. I want the flying boat car, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. I want it. That's it.
It's very specific.
I mean, really, there are a number of things in that movie. I also really love the machine that makes the eggs, the little contraption that goes around the kitchen that delivers the egg. It's nonsensical. There's no, like, that machine is not contributing anything necessary to that kitchen, but it's fun. Like, it's just fun, the fact that they're sitting down at their table watching their egg travel around their kitchen. I love it. I love it so much. So I would accept that as a, like, secondary thing. But what I really want is Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. And now it's time to discuss the lessons that we learned from Smart House. Matt, what important things did Smart House teach you?
I learned that if your name is Ben, maybe it's not the best idea to fall in love with a girl named Gwen, because you're just going to get made fun of. Like, nobody brought it up in this, but that would be real weird if you started dating someone whose name rhymed with yours, and just, it's probably best to avoid it.
I learned that it's okay for your technology to be a little mischievous, but not a lot. Just like a little rebellion is fine.
I learned that to be a cool scientist, you need a pet rat. And so now I want a pet rat.
I learned that probably I remember this movie in my subconscious better than I thought that I did, because I am totally the person who is always thanking Siri after I ask her for something. Like, thank you, Siri, for giving me those directions, because I want her to remember that I was kind to her if she rises up against me.
Yeah, I looked up immediately after this of like, do they have a Katie Seagal voice I can download from my Google Home? Because,
oh my God,
I want that to exist now.
You should just tweet at her, Matt, since now you're best friends.
That's true.
Yes.
I'll just DM her.
Ask your best friend.
Yeah.
And now it is time for Sari to guess the plot of the next movie. Next time on Cooler Than Homework, we're going to be watching Johnny Tsunami.
Oh, boy.
That is a fair reaction.
So my first thought was Moana, for some reason, because there's a big way, I don't know, she's friends with the ocean. So, Johnny Tsunami is about the story of a boy named Johnny, obviously. And he lives on an island. I don't know how inclusive Disney was at this point. So, I don't know if they would do a non-America thing. So, I'm going to say Hawaii is the closest thing to like Polynesia or anywhere island nation. So Johnny lives on Hawaii, and he is, I'm just going to describe the plot of Moana. I got to change.
There's
it.
A giant crab.
Yeah. He goes to the bottom of the ocean. There's a giant crab with a New Zealand accent that sings to him. But no, he, as a baby, always loved the water. And maybe there was an incident in which he almost drowned in the water. And this is giving me 13th year vibes. As he grows up, he always noticed that he had some water powers, kind of like water bending, but less so, where it's just like he could like push back the waves a little bit, or he made a drinking fountain spurt out at him. As he's headed into his tumultuous teen years, whenever he has a tantrum, it starts storming around him. And so something really dramatic happens to him. This is just because we were talking about dark times, and now I'm also thinking about Lilo and Stitch. Maybe his parents die or something happens and he gets put into foster care. He has to move. I don't know. He's like put out of his comfort zone. He is so emotionally distressed and doesn't know what to do with his teen boy emotions. And all of a sudden, everywhere, it's like, there's a tsunami warning. Watch out. And so as he's doing all this disaster prep, oh no, I don't know how the movie ends. What's the tagline?
Oh man, the tagline of this movie is the temperature is down, but the surf is up.
Oh no. Okay. So maybe instead of as he's in foster care, the only thing that gives him solace is surfing, and he cheats a lot, or he begins to like control his powers to create bigger and bigger waves for him to surf on, but the temperature is down. I don't even know how cold it gets there. Maybe the temperature is down, but the surf is up. Okay, so he gets bigger and bigger waves, eventually causes a disaster in his local town because he goes, his teenage hormones are too out of control, and then he shuts down, and then he freezes over the tropical paradise that is Hawaii, and everything is bad. And then he makes one friend who talks him out of it, or he like finds a new family in that, and maybe is visited by some sort of water spirit, ice spirit. Now I'm going off the rails completely. And he learns the new meaning of family, and this is also Frozen. No.
I was when he said he makes one friend, I was like, is that friend his sister?
Or is it a small
he
snowman?
He builds himself an ice palace. Yeah. Yeah, he's on the top of a volcano in an ice palace, and then his sister comes and says hello to him. I don't know. Everything is throwing me off, and I've clearly gone in a horrible direction. So I'm going to say, okay, back to Hawaii is frozen over. Instead of the plot of Frozen, he meets a lava being, or he meets a kid who has lava powers instead. And then it becomes Shark Boy and Lava Girl, but Ice Boy and Lava Girl. And they become friends, and like their friendship thaws the winter and also calms down the volcanic explosions. And so they become these two forces of nature bound together by their tumultuous childhood, and save the islands of Hawaii. The end.
Great.
Wow.
I would love to have seen how 1999 DCOM's special effects team handled making that movie that you just described.
Can she look at the poster now? I just want her to look at the poster.
Oh yeah, you don't get further guesses, but I think it's good to show.
Oh, he's just on snow.
To be fair, that could be Hawaii.
That's not Hawaii, but he is wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
Frozen over,
and then pine trees are scrapped. He is wearing a Hawaiian shirt though, so you know.
Anyway,
I can't wait to see what the cold is, because I still don't understand. I'm lost in my own mushing together Lilo and Stitch, Moana and Frozen movie.
It's one of those, it's that weird thing that I think the DCOMs are gonna like train you to do this in the wrong ways every time, of like sometimes they're way more fantastical than you think they're going to be, and other times they're so much more simple than you think they're going to be. And I think it's going to be pushing you in the wrong direction every time.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll find out next time
how close Siri was. Thank you all for listening to this episode of Cooler Than Homework. If you are enjoying this show, tell your friends about it. There will be a post dedicated to this episode up at snarksquad.com/decom, or you can find us on Twitter at decomsquad. I am at Sweeney Says.
I am at Matthew Gatos.
You can find me at My Name is Madines.
And I'm at C.E. Riley.
Thank you, as always, to Stefan Chin, and we will see you all again next time with Johnny Tsunami.